Yesterday, March 3rd, marked a somber anniversary, 1 year since the first COVID-positive patient was identified in North Carolina. To mark the occasion, UNC health experts gathered to reflect on lessons learned over the past year and also to look ahead at what's next. 97.9 The Hill's Al Karras has more.
Today, obviously, is the anniversary of the first COVID-19 cases here in North Carolina. And last week, the country passed 500,000 deaths, which, like, those numbers really seem, like, just hard to comprehend at times.
That was Dr. Wesley Burks, the CEO of UNC Health and Dean of the UNC School of Medicine. Burks kicked off Wednesday's panel by opening the floor to UNC's top health experts to share their experiences from the past year. When the pandemic first started, UNC's Respiratory Diagnostic Center and Clinical Microbiology Labs were some of the first to spring into action. Dr. Melissa Miller is the director of UNC's Clinical Microbiology Lab. She said when COVID-19 testing first began on March 16th, UNC was only able to conduct 100 to 120 tests per day. Now, Miller's labs can conduct 2,500 tests per day if they receive all the supplies needed.
So in the last year, we've done 250,000 tests just at the medical center. If you look at UNC Health-wide, we also help bring up testing at our affiliate labs so that they had some local testing once commercial tests were available. We've done almost 350,000 tests statewide.
Outside of mass testing across the state, UNC Hospitals has been actively treating individuals with severe cases of coronavirus. Dr. David Weber, a professor of infectious diseases and the medical director of infection prevention, said UNC's medical center has treated 1,700 patients over the past year.
We have had, despite this large number of patients, not a single one of our healthcare providers working in a COVID unit or in our emergency department have acquired COVID as a result of working here in the hospital. So we do know how to prevent transmission of this virus.
As North Carolinians have endured one full year of pandemic hardships, hope is on the horizon as local vaccination efforts continue to ramp up. Since vaccinations first began in December, UNC Health's 15 vaccination clinics have administered nearly 200,000 doses of vaccine, with nearly 35,000 at the Friday Center alone. Following recent news that the United States will have enough vaccine doses for every adult by the end of May, Weber said it's likely we will also reach community protection levels at the end of May or June. Community protection means that 85% of the population has either been vaccinated or built up immunity from having COVID.
So I do see by the end of summer that many of the aspects of daily life we've had to alter may change. And the major concern in the future really is the development of variants that escape vaccine and or therapy. But both the drug companies working on new therapies and the vaccine companies working on potentially booster doses that cover these variants.
Since January 20th, the amount of vaccine received by the state has increased by 135% and is expected to continue growing with the introduction of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. More than 80,000 doses are expected to arrive in the state in the coming week. Dr. David Wohl, a professor of medicine and top infectious disease expert at UNC, explained the differences in efficacy between the Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson vaccine. In large clinical trials, Wohl said the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine proved to be 95% effective in preventing illness from COVID-19. Comparatively, following studies done in other countries, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is proving to be 65 to 70% effective.
The good news is when you look at the data from the U.S., the J&J vaccine did better. And when you look at preventing severe COVID-19 hospitalizations and death, it looks just as good as the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines. So I feel the benefits of having one shot being one and done are really important for a lot of people. But I do believe people should look at the data as much as we can share with them and explain it to them and make some decisions for themselves.
UNC Health's vaccination clinic at the Friday Center in Chapel Hill expects to receive 3,600 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in the next day or two. Those doses will be used to hold special vaccination days for educators next week. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Elle Karras.
In Raleigh, Republicans are moving forward this week on a second attempt to override Governor Cooper's veto of a bill that would require K-12 schools to reopen for in-person instruction. Not actually a lot of difference between the two sides. Cooper says he vetoed the bill because it doesn't give districts any flexibility to act in the event of a future outbreak, but he has also been urging schools to reopen, and now the state health department has issued new guidance also calling on schools to reopen as much as possible while protecting public safety. Orange County schools are already set to return to the classroom beginning next week. Chapel Hill Carrboro City schools are holding off until April 19th for now, but the school board will be discussing that question when they meet tonight at 7. Visit chccs.org to watch that meeting online. Also in Raleigh, the State House unanimously signed off on a bill allocating another $1.7 billion in federal COVID relief funds. And the House also voted to approve a pair of bills allowing greater attendance at high school and college sporting events. All of those now go to the Senate. Back locally, longtime Orange and Chatham District Attorney Jim Woodall says he's not running for re-election when his term is up next year. Woodall has been the DA for District 18 since 2005, so he's been in that seat for a long time. Yesterday, Assistant DA Jeff Neiman came on this show to announce his own plans to run for the open seat. Woodall's term expires next year, by the way, in 2022. You can listen to that conversation on our website, chapelboro.com. Just scroll down to This Morning with Aaron Keck for that. And over to Hillsborough, where a public hearing has been set to consider renaming Thomas Ruffin Street. Thomas Ruffin was a 19th century state Supreme Court justice with ties to white supremacy, and residents of the street have been petitioning the town to change the name. Mayor Jen Weaver recently discussed the process with 97.9 The Hill.
This is the first time that we will be implementing this new process that we've created for any kind of renaming. So it'll be new for everyone, but I expect it to be, you know, familiar as far as public hearings go, in that we will, open the public hearing, and then the folks from Thomas Ruffin Street who made this request will come and speak, and we will be able to ask them questions, and I'm sure we'll be asking staff if they're are any other, you know, what repercussions there may be just for, you know, for renaming things generally, because it has logistical implications for sure. And there may be others who want to speak on the issue as well. And we just need to let the process play out.
Absolutely. And I know that commissioners will, you know, step back, and this is the time for the public to comment on it, hence public hearing. But, you know, the town has made a lot of efforts, not just in recent years, but in general, to have a pretty big focus on making sure that it is a place where everybody feels comfortable and a place that honors many people. And as you see these discussions going around in your community, you know, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, I think I would describe my reaction to it as it is difficult at times, but I absolutely welcome it. I described it last week as, you know, it's sort of like, the life of a caterpillar, the life of a butterfly. Is it probably doesn't feel good to be turned into soup, you know, when the caterpillar's in the cocoon. but then what you get on the other side is, something really beautiful. And I think that in that way, these renaming conversations really give us a powerful opportunity to really have these hard conversations and talk about what kind of community, to really be the community that we have claimed to aspire to for a very long time, and to make that more actionable and more real.
That's Hillsborough Mayor Jen Weaver speaking there with Brighton McConnell, and you can get that full conversation in the News on the Hill section of chapelboro.com. And go to Chapelboro for even more local news, including the latest on a new pasta restaurant called Tesoro that's set to open on East Weaver Street in Carrboro later this spring, owned by a former chef at the Fearington House. Should be pretty good. 6:16, your time. Time now for sports, brought to you this hour by Wegmans, now open in Chapel Hill. The ACC Women's Basketball Tournament got underway yesterday in Greensboro with 13-seed BC beating 12th-seeded Pitt 67-56, so Boston College moving on. The 8th-seeded Tar Heel women hit the court at noon today, taking on 9-seed Wake Forest. The winner of that one will move on to face Louisville, the top seed, tomorrow, but Tar Heels have to get past the Demon Deacons first. We've got all the action for you right here on 97.9 The Hill. Again, tip-off time is noon. Our pregame coverage will begin at 11:30. Matt Krause will be on the call. Two Tar Heels, by the way, received individual honors before the tourney even began. Congrats to freshman Deja Kelly and Alyssa Ustby, both named to the All-ACC Academic Team, two of 41 ACC players so honored. Also in action tonight, the Carolina Hurricanes back home in Raleigh with a three-game winning streak. They're looking to keep that going as they face the Detroit Red Wings tonight at 7.